Hello and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. This is episode 339 with a number. And I'm your host, Jonathan Metz. With me, as always, are James Jones.
Irregular counting leading in a clap.
And Guillaume Vayette.
Aye, aye, Captain.
And John Lindman should be here in a few minutes. We're not sure what the hell's going on. Oh, fucking A right
no,
there.
No, that was me trying to call him.
Oh.
I'm just trying to make noises on his computer at this
Jeez,
point.
Jeez, James, you're distracting the hell out of me.
Sorry.
And John Lindemann should be here in a few minutes, or maybe later, or not at all. We don't know.
Just as a fair warning, we moved recording to Wednesday this week in case something happens tomorrow and we don't talk about it and you send us angry emails.
We've been without news of him for 2 weeks. If you heard about of him, like if you've seen him somewhere, please contact us.
No, he told me he insulted me over Skype the other day, so we're good.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're good. He's definitely still alive.
He's alive.
But, he's we don't know. Captain somewhere, but he's always got time.
He sounded bitter and old, so I assume it was him.
Yeah, John just had a birthday, so he's extra bitter and old this week. He's also having a wedding anniversary this week, which is why we're recording a day early, specifically to cater to John Lindemann's schedule, and he's not here. So we're going to make fun of him a little bit.
We recorded on Wednesday so that John could be here. Fucking asshole.
But anyway, we hope John will be back later. We're going to be doing E3 predictions in the second half of the show, and we definitely hope he's here for that, John.
He can't hear you.
Oh, he'll hear me eventually.
He's not going to listen to the show.
So much passive aggressivity.
He might if he ever wants to go back and find out how dumb our predictions were. He might go back and listen. And then, like, months later, he'll be really shamed that he wasn't
he'll
here.
He'll feel the sting.
Anyway, this is our last episode before E3 starts. So, well, before, it's the last one before Guillaume and I leave to go to E3. We'll probably do something pretty early once we get there. So I don't expect any kind of break in schedule, really. And as usual, we'll probably have at least 2 or 3 episodes during the week of E3. But this is our last normal episode before E3. So yeah, we're going to do our predictions, our much highly requested predictions.
Yeah.
It's funny. People constantly make fun of our predictions and how bad they are. And yet they also, these same people are the ones who most ardently ask us to keep doing them. So
because they want to make fun of us for being wrong.
I guess. Yeah, I guess so. Anyway, we are going to start out with new business, and I actually got to play some games and talk about them pretty recently on the Nintendo Pirate Radio episode we did with a totally different crew, so I wanted to let you guys go first, and we'll start with Guillaume.
Yeah, well, recently I reviewed Lego Batman 2 DC Super Heroes for the Wii U, a late port, 11 months old port of this game. And I released my review to complete indifference. So
the game nobody was waiting for.
Yeah, I guess
but
so.
But this game, people loved this game when it first came out.
They did, but now, you know, like it's old news, I guess. They don't need it anymore. They've played it. And nothing really was added to this version. But if you haven't played it yet, you know, you might want to check it out. But you know, like I've gained some perspective playing this game. I now understand why it's so hard to convince other people that Lego City Undercover is actually, like, really funny and really, really, like, worth playing. Because I was playing this is basically, well, this is a game that came before, like, it was their last game before Lego City Undercover. And so it's got a couple of the features that I really like about Lego City Undercover, but they're not quite fully cooked yet. Mainly, like, I think it was their first LEGO game to have voice acting, and it was also, like, an open world, an open Gotham City that you could explore. Mm-hmm. So I enjoyed those aspects very, very much, but unfortunately, the voice acting in LEGO Batman 2 is confined to the cutscenes, and so there is nothing really to distract you while you're doing the missions. And the missions are just the most boring, tedious, humdrum things that you could ever do in a video game. Like, when you've got, like, complete silence between Batman and Robin, and all you're doing is smash stuff and smash some more stuff, and finally you smash the right object that will allow you to build, oh god, a ladder that's going to allow you to access the next part of the level, where you're going to smash more stuff and you're going to build some exciting things, like a bridge or, you know, like a, I don't know, like a stepladder. Like, it's really not that interesting.
So hold up. You're describing every LEGO game.
Well, yeah,
ever.
Like, I'm sure I am. So now that I've seen this, now that I know what it's like to play a LEGO game that's not as well made as LEGO City Undercover, I understand more why people are just like, yeah, sure. You know, you seem to like it. That's cool. I'm never going to play Undercover. But yeah, like, it's really not fun at all. And, you know, like, I don't know if you guys have played Batman, The Brave and the Bold on the Wii.
No, I always heard it was, you know, very short, but really, really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's, and just like, LEGO City Undercover, during the missions, you have constant banter between Batman and someone else, like Robin, and then some other characters that I don't remember offhand. They're pretty obscure. But this banter between them just adds so much to the game, you know, and you're doing some pretty tedious, mundane gameplay. I mean, like, Batman the Brave and the Bold was just basically a final fight type of beat 'em up. But just the fact that you've got this constant dialogue between the characters, it's actually funny and interesting, and, you know, like, it really helps entertain you, really, while you're doing some mindless, you know, co-op with perhaps a younger gamer, because, you know, like, with a child or something, because it's not, you know, like, these games are skewed pretty young, right? So, yeah, I don't know, like, just the absence of that really highlights the fact that what you're doing is really not fun at all.
Yep, that's how I feel about LEGO games. So, the important thing is here that the takeaway is that LEGO City Undercover is far better.
I think so. Like, the missions themselves were less about just smashing everything in sight and had a little bit more platforming to them. And I gotta say that LEGO Batman 2, outside of the missions, is actually pretty damn fun. Like, I'm still playing it right now, and instead of just smashing everything inside, it's more platforming. You've got these, like, mini obstacle courses that you're going through. And it's, you know, like, I actually like that. You know, the platforming is perhaps not as tight as it would be in a Mario game, but it's certainly just about as challenging or more challenging and more satisfying than something like Uncharted or Assassin's Creed. So, you know, like, I've got no complaints there. And Gotham City is really, really fun to explore. It's really, you know, it's got amazing sights. It's very much, you know, based on the Gotham City from the Tim Burton movies. So it just looks fantastic. And basically the only difference between LEGO Gotham City and the Gotham City from those movies is that, like, those giant statues are, you know, LEGO characters. It's, you know, it's pretty cute.
Hmm.
I don't know, like, I recommend the game. Like, thankfully the missions are short, so, like, you can get through them very quickly. You unlock all the characters that you need to explore the city, and from there you can start having fun. And one of the characters that you can not avoid unlocking right away is Superman. And as Superman, you can just double tap the B button and start flying. And the controls are a little bit hard to grasp, but to master. But, you know, like, just being able to fly everywhere as Superman is an awesome feeling, especially since the John Williams theme just starts playing when you start flying. It's pretty awesome.
So for the open world part of the game, when you're Superman, it makes it a lot easier to get around.
It does. And okay, what's weird is that, you know, like, okay, the ultimate goal, I guess, while you're exploring Gotham City is to collect gold bricks. So, like, you would think, okay, well, I can fly anywhere, I can just go grab them. But, you know, you'll need some tool that only Batman has, for instance, to collect a gold brick. So you as Superman, you can basically go to the gold brick and then start trying to figure out like backwards, going backwards into the platforming section to see where it starts. Hmm. It's a weird kind of progression, but yeah, I very much like it.
Cool, man. All right, so
hi, everybody.
Yeah, John's here.
I've just been lurking. This is a podcast where I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to lurk.
So it's going to be normal, basically.
It's going to be a normal podcast. Yes, yeah. I'm sure some of our listeners will say that. Damn you, well, and damn you all.
Well, I'm very glad you could join us finally, John.
Yes, it's good to be here, Johnny.
All right, so John, what have you been playing in video games in the last 2 weeks?
Well, let me see. I did happen to download the demo for Marvel Pinball 3D.
You sound so excited.
It's pretty good. It's not. I mean, I wasn't blown away by it. The demo.
It's pinball, John. It's fucking pinball.
Yeah, I know it's fucking pinball. But God,
it's no Metroid Prime pinball.
Or even Pokemon Pinball for that matter. Mm. I had heard
Church.
I had heard that it was good, so I decided to check it out. The demo is kind of limited. I mean, it gives you two boards. There's Fantastic Four and Blade, who I totally forgot was a Marvel character.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
It's not wow. the best stable in the bunch.
Yeah.
We're scraping the bottom of the barrel early on this one.
I'm sure I offended most people with that statement, but whatever.
I don't think anybody's offended by making fun of Blade.
Yeah, I guess.
I don't even think Wesley Snipes is offended by making fun of Blade.
Well, I mean, he's still in jail for tax evasion, right?
Probably.
Whatever.
I don't know.
Anyways, yeah, so the game itself is not bad. My only problem with it, the tables are actually quite impressive. They're large, and there's a whole lot of stuff you can do, a whole lot of different targets you can hit and everything. And they actually have a mode where you can go through and, you know, go through like kind of a 15-page booklet where it explains what every target does, which I thought is nice because a lot of pinball games, they don't really tell you exactly what everything on the board does, and they don't really tell you how to, at least within the game itself, they don't tell you how to target everything and how to, you know, trip everything you can do. So there's that, which is good. The only thing I don't like is there's two camera angles, and neither one of them seems exactly right.
Wait, on the 3DS game, there's a lot more than two camera angles.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, maybe
if you
maybe
just keep pushing
the
X, it'll scroll through several.
I just saw two, but I mean, I could.
There's
I
like
could
seven.
That may be the demo.
And they're numbered.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's two in the demo. I think it's just there's like one that's like up above, and then one that's kind of far away and looking sort of directly onto it. Hmm. But yeah, it just seems like I always felt like I was a bit too far away from the action to exactly see what was going on, especially when the ball got far up the board. You know, because there's several things that it can kind of go up and behind and, you know, stuff like that. So it never quite felt right. So I think that probably if you bought the full game, you would like it more than if you just played these couple of boards. Because it just seems like, you know, if you guys are talking about there's extra camera angles and stuff like that, one of the things that also annoyed me about it was that it just cuts you off kind of arbitrarily in the middle of a game. Like, I think each time that you play is timed. And it just stops. So it's not like, you know, you hit a particular score and it stops. Or, you know, you complete a certain task and the game stops. It just stops. So you're in the middle of playing and you're like, hey, I really enjoy this. Okay, the game just stopped.
Oh, so that didn't make you want to run and go buy it immediately?
So it's, I don't know. I thought it was kind of a dumb move for a demo like this.
Come on. All they have to do is just give you a limited number of credits.
Yeah, limited number of credits or either that or make it up to a score. I mean, it's not like I was sitting there playing for a long time at all. I mean, it's not. I mean, you maybe sit there for maybe 5-10 minutes and it stops. I didn't exactly time it, but it just seems like kind of arbitrary. Like, oh, what the hell? What the hell has happened? Oh, all right, the demo's over, and then it says thank you for playing this demo. You know, and I'm just like, okay, well, I really didn't even get that deep into the game, or actually, you know, because that's the thing. One thing with pinball is that you know you want to see how far you can get, how high of a score you can get, kind of stuff like that. So I felt like it kind of defeated the purpose to just cut it off like that. But, But it's good. The demo it's pretty gimped. There's a lot of stuff that's locked in it, so I don't know if it's necessarily, you know, like the best way to represent the game. But it's good. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if it's worth. I think it's like $8 or something like that. I don't know if I would pay that much for it. I'm not too sure, but I would cautiously recommend it. I think if you're a big pinball fan, you would definitely like it. I mean, obviously it's a pinball game, but I think even among pinball games, the other ones I've played. it looks pretty good. I mean, it has a lot of interesting things that kind of made me say, wow, it's pretty cool. Like, you know, like with the, on the Fantastic Four board, one of the things that you have to do is, I think it's Mr. Fantastic. Is that one of the guys, the guy with the, with the elastic hand?
Mm-hmm.
I'm a total comic noob, but, one of the things you have to do is you have to aim for his arm. He puts his arm kind of somewhere out on the board and you have to aim for it. And he picks it up with his, picks your ball up with his hand. It's just kind of cool. Like there's a lot of stuff like that. And all of the, everything on the boards looks really impressive. It's like some really good 3D models of all the different characters and, you know, just a lot of cool kind of things they do. And the boards are very active. You know, there's a lot going on. It's not like just some, you know, just a couple of, you know, kind of figurine style static characters out on the boards. They're always like turning around and doing stuff and, you know.
Yeah, and it's always video gamey stuff, right? Like your ball can catch fire, you know, like on that table, and you can trace like the number four somewhere on the table, just like in the movies, I guess.
Yeah, so it's cool. So I'd recommend it. I mean, if you're a pinball fan, I mean, the demo probably isn't the best way to represent it, but I think it'd be pretty solid. I know it's gotten some good reviews. I think some people, I think on Twitter or on our forums have been talking about it, so it's a good game.
Some of our staff members are ridiculously addicted to it. And Guillaume, you've played a ton of it, haven't you?
I did initially when it came out, but I've realized since then that I'm really bad at keeping up with games with leaderboards. And once someone really trounces me, I'm just like, I'm going to move on to something else. Otherwise, how much time can you, you know, waste of your life trying to reclaim the high score? Like,
quite a bit. Ask Billy Mitchell.
Yeah, I pretty much gave up that with Johnny in Geometry Wars. He was always way out ahead of me.
Yeah, well, I think I've been trounced in Geometry Wars by Jared Rosenberg, I think, is the one who his score really dwarfed mine on all the modes that I was actually good at. So.
Yeah. I was just never able to really figure out the tricks, right? Like, there's always something where, you know, you can figure it out so you get 10 times your score by doing a certain thing. I could just never figure those things out. I was just never good at it.
I think a lot of these high score games, especially not stuff like Bit Trip Runner 2, but the games like Pinball and Geometry Wars where, you know, it's kind of open-ended game length, a lot of it just comes down to just surviving longer.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, I mean, and Geometry Wars does have a mode that's time limited, and so you really just have to make the most effective use of the time that you have. But most of the modes are just really open-ended, and so sometimes if you can just survive for an extra 60 seconds, you can almost double your score, because they have all these multipliers and combos and jackpots and all kinds of different scoring mechanisms, and if you just last a little bit longer than the other guy, you might have a drastically different score.
Yep. Yeah. Like there was always, I always came up against some kind of brick wall sort of thing where I knew that if I just could survive that one particular, the end of this wave, I knew that I would just have some huge score multiplier that would, you know, blast my score into the stratosphere kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you guys correct me if I'm wrong, but I want to say that the pinball game on Wii U has like the regular tables, and you can get the Marvel tables as DLC, so it's all in one package.
You can buy tables individually, I believe, and there are bundles. Like there are, you know, Marvel superhero bundles. Yeah, like there's also like the Star Wars tables are going to come eventually.
Okay,
they're out on basically every platform but a Wii U right now.
They even did a sale, I want to say, on the Marvel tables.
It's possible. I missed it then. But what's really annoying with the Wii U version is that, you know, like you can basically demo tables, but not all the demos are included with a free trial. You have to go download them separately. So you have to exit the game, you know, like you see a table, oh, that looks interesting. I like this character. You select it and it's like, well, you have to download it first. Okay, so you exit, you go to the eShop, you download the table, and then you go back and you try it out, and it's like, hey, this is pretty fun, and then the game cuts, right? So, okay, thanks for playing the demo, you know, please buy it. Okay, so you press the button that's, you know, the buy button, and it says, cool, please go to the eShop and buy the table. Like, are you serious? It's just like so many steps, and you know, like I think I touched on that in one earlier episode, but yeah, like it feels like the eShop is not quite there yet, you know, like it's kind of still pretty undercooked. Like, you can buy tables right out of the game on PSN, but can't yet on the Wii U. So I'm looking forward to the day when Nintendo implements that.
That's lame, but can't on the Wii U version, can you just play the whole thing on the gamepad?
Yeah, you can.
So that's a big, that's probably for a lot of people a big improvement over, you know, any other console version. And it's actually kind of makes it a nice bridge, because definitely the big appeal of the 3DS one is that you can play it anywhere. And I think a lot of people for a lot of guys, a portable pinball would be really nice. Like, that, it's an arcade game. You can only play it, you know, you can play it for just a few minutes at a time. So, like, having it on a portable is really nice. But if you don't actually take your portable anywhere, you just kind of play it around the house, then maybe the gamepad is a nice fill-in for that. And then you get some of the other benefits of having it on the console, you know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, all right, that's Marvel Pinball. So, James, why don't you go next?
Yep, so, very briefly, I'm going to speak about a review copy I have, which will have a very soon to be forthcoming review mini, called Murder Mysteries Jack the Ripper, which is a 3DS eShop game, which is also awful. So it's a hidden objects game with a really, really bad mystery story attached to it, where you have to poke out a list of items like it's an I Spy book from cluttered imagery, and then do really poorly conceived Sam and Max style puzzles. This would be a pretty ho-hum experience if it weren't for the fact this was originally an iPad game, so everything's super, super tiny. Yay. Mm. You can zoom in, but that means you can only see what you're super focused in on. Way to go, guys. So I'm going to go ahead and say, before the review comes out, yeah, you probably shouldn't play this game. What I'm going to talk about instead is equally dumb, but amazingly better. What I've been playing the most this last week is Asura's Wrath, which, like I said, is a tremendously stupid, amazingly awesome game. So we've talked about it on the show before. Basically, you play a demigod who's been betrayed by a bunch of other demigods that has spent 12,000 years in purgatory and has now returned to find all of those demigods that betrayed him elevated to god status.
Now, this is the giant finger.
This is the giant finger, yes.
Being held back by a single character.
These gods are in dire need of an ass beating, and it is your job to deliver said ass beating. It's presented in... Basically, it's presented like a monster of the week anime taken to the most extreme levels of stupidity that it is truly a thing of wonder. You may... the individual chapters are each followed by a next time on, like their TV show. In the middle of the chapters, they have, like, the bumpers they play before and after commercial breaks for no reason whatsoever except to put them there. And after the bumper, they even do, like, the quick recap of what just happened before the commercial break, just for fun, I guess. And there's a tremendous amount of incredibly stupid dialogue where characters sit there and scream at each other and say ridiculous things and gesticulate and do all kinds of dumb shit. And occasionally you get to fight things in a relatively satisfying brawler that sometimes is also a shooter, that sometimes is also like a Star Fox game. Ooh. It's just complete madhouse bullshittery.
Yeah, explain the Star Fox reference.
So there is a stretch at the very beginning of the game where you still serving the now deceased emperor are fighting back this corruption that has overtaken Earth as a general at the command of a giant starfleet. However, you are not in a ship. You are actually flying yourself, shooting lasers out of your hands at these enemies, these big, giant battleships. You can lock on and shoot off. It's kind of like a mix of Star Fox and Sin of Punishment.
Right.
You go straight forward, you blast off, you know, locked on projectiles, or you just spam fire and just shoot everything around you. It's so dumb that it's awesome. Of course, the game is punctuated by these quick time events that happen all of the time. So basically, like, suddenly it'll pop up. You need to press the Y button, which if you do, Asura will basically start screaming, power up his fist, and then punch the ever-living crap out of something. So I first got exposed to this game at E3 2011, I guess. Capcom was showing a trailer for it, and it was the dumbest thing in their really long movie reel of trailers for really dumb-looking games. But it was at Eurocom they showed, or it was at Gamecom, they showed the Finger trailer, which is Asura is fighting a god who turns into this giant thing bigger than the planet Earth, and then pushes a finger down through the atmosphere as it's being heated up because it's going through reentry, and then he catches it with his six arms, and the heat of the finger is causing the Earth's crust to crack.
Yeah.
And then he punches his way through the finger.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Like,
it's so dumb.
So you love this game.
It won points with me on pure stupidity.
Oh, it's beautiful. It makes Fist of the North Star look like the most reserved and tepid writing ever conceived. I mean, it is the dumbest thing I've ever played, and it is beautiful for it.
Yeah, you love this, right?
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, there was a scene where he's the first time he encounters one of his former comrades who's now been promoted to a full god. Like, he's just being taunted by this guy, and his constant response is just to go, "Shut up!" And then finally you get an option. It's just a quick time event. It says B. It says, press B to shut him up. You press B. What's he do? He jumps and punches the dude in the face. I was like, yes. Thank you, game. It's exactly what I needed right now. I could have sat there and let him listen to me, but no, I want to punch him.
Doesn't it feel, though, that you'd be better off just watching an anime version of this?
I would, if this were a show on television, I would watch it. But most of the time, I'm pretty much just watching it anyway, at least in the first seven chapters. I mean, there is a lot of video going on here, or a lot of in-game animation. I mean, it's dumb and stupid, and the interactive segments, you know, there probably should be more of them for this to be constituting a video game. But I kind of like that they're there, because you'll be sitting there and your eyes will have glazed over because two divine individuals are in a pissing match over who's stronger. And then all of a sudden the game will tell you need to hit the left stick to the right. And then if you don't, he gets cold cocked in the face. And you're like, oh, I fucked it up. And then you get to watch him bitch about being punched in the face. It's great.
So I've definitely been wanting to try this out, and I'm looking for a good deal on it. But I've also heard that in order to really kind of get the conclusion of the story, you have to buy the DLC. Like, it's technically optional, but if you actually care about the story, and if you don't, I don't know why you would bother with this game. Then you're pretty much out like $10 to get the DLC.
I can imagine that would be the case. I know that there's four packs of DLC. There's two chapters that come at the end. And then there are like split off chapters. So like chapter 15 and a half, where you see stuff between 15 and 16. I'm not that far yet. So I'm not to the point where I feel that motivated to get this stuff. I do know that there is a scene in which, oh, first off, the game is completely clad in like deep, deep ass Shinto mythology. I mean, we're talking, you know, the art style that you would see of like a statue of Raijin from the 13th century. I mean, just over the top ridiculousness. And at one point, they've got all these characters lined up, you know, looking like their divine inspiration. And they show Azura, they're just screaming at them for no reason whatsoever. They look all prim and proper and neatly drawn. And he's just all rough going, until four arms pop out of his back. So I'm pretty much going to buy the DLC anyway. Just for shit like that. It's so ridiculous.
Yep.
Oh, it's beautiful. I got to say, it's. I mean, from a gameplay standpoint, it's not... I mean, it's not a great brawler. The combat system is pretty, you know, it's pretty neutral. I mean, it's not great.
It's simple,
it's
right?
It's not bad. It just is. I mean, it functions, but there is some depth to it, but it's not, you know, it's not going to get fighting fans excited.
Well, it's CyberConnect, right? So it's going it plays a little bit like what I've played of
everything they've ever made.
Naruto,
yeah. I mean, it is. It's CyberConnect game, and it feels every bit of it. The QuickTime events are oftentimes really stupid, and you're just like, oh my god, seriously, another one. But it doesn't matter because you're really just there for the stupidity, and the stupidity is so rewarding that I don't even have words for it. I played a chapter just before we started the show, and I was grinning the entire time, even though I wasn't doing a damn thing, because I was just sitting there while he yelled at another god for 5 minutes. I'm actually excited to play this game every time I pick it up.
That's awesome.
Because, I mean, you just don't know what kind of dumb, moronic stupidity they're going to throw at you next.
Mm-hmm.
And you just sit there like, I'm ready for it.
Cool, man. All right, so that's Asura's Wrath. And I'm going to go next with a game that we've talked about before on the show. I just want to kind of give my own perspective on it since I've had a few hours with it. And that is Mario and Donkey Kong Minis on the Move.
Hey.
You know, it's the latest in a long line of games in this series, and Guillaume said a lot about it, and I don't really have anything to contradict what he said, and you got a lot of play on connectivity as well. But I just kind of wanted to reconfirm for people in case you're still on the fence. I think this game is easily worth $10. There's a ton of content in it. But of course, you know, you have to realize that this is a puzzle game. There's, It's definitely not an action game. Now, they do a good job of making it timed in the sense that you have to pay attention while you're playing it. And even though you are just kind of laying out these tiles, that create a pathway for characters to walk on, it's not like you do all that and then you just sit back and watch it. That's the case in the first couple levels maybe, but then very quickly what happens is they will have you going, you're going to have to kind of retrace and like cross over your path, which means they'll start giving you bomb tiles. You have to blow up places that you were before and put on a new tile so that you can go in a new direction when you get back to that same place. And that becomes very important. And so you have to actually do that while the character is moving on the path. And so it gets really hectic actually after a while. And there, in some of the modes, these tiles just kind of keep coming down, you know, Tetris style, and they just keep filling up this reservoir. And if they ever fill up the whole thing, it's game over and you have to restart that stage. And I'm finding that to be a real challenge as I get deeper into the game. A lot of times it's not finding the right tile or figuring out, you know, the best path to take. It's just, can I dump these tiles fast enough to keep going? And it creates a tension between choosing the best tile for the situation and just trying to clear out that queue just so it doesn't overfill. I've found the game to be surprisingly challenging, even though I'm not super far into it. Maybe I'm just bad at this kind of spatial reasoning game. I'm not sure.
I think you might be bad at it.
Yeah, I think I might be. I mean, I was complaining to you a couple weeks ago, Guillaume. I was on one of the Toad levels. So
yeah.
The main part of the game is split up into four different modes. And they're all based on tile things. So it's not like they're drastically different from each other. They're all still about, you know, creating these paths with the tiles. But in the Toad level, it starts out and you've just, all the tiles are already on the board and you can just rotate them by tapping on them. So you've got, you know, different like corner pieces that you can make point in different directions by just tapping on them. And so you've got Toads going through here and you're trying to keep rotating the tiles in such a way that they'll get all the little secret things and then you can finally get them around to the end. And it's neat. It's very different. It feels very different than placing the tiles yourself because everything's already out there and you just kind of have to figure out how to make it work. And it's a little more frantic because you're doing it all in real time as the Toad is going around. Mm-hmm. And I was really enjoying that. And then they throw me onto this sliding block puzzle. So now it's a similar idea. All the tiles are already on the board, except there are gaps. And instead of just rotating tiles, now you're sliding them across the gaps, and basically just moving the tiles. And the very first level that they gave me to learn this mechanic, which I've never used before in any other mode, there are two Toads now, whereas I think before there was only one on the spinning tile stages. Now there's two Toads. They come from different parts of the level and they both have to get to the same objective. And you have to move, you basically have to throw tiles back and forth between their two paths in order to get them to both keep going without falling off the stage. And for some reason, I'm finding this incredibly difficult. I've tried it over and over and over and over again, and it seems like they move too fast or there just aren't enough of the pieces that I need to get it done. And I'm trying to juggle. I mean, this would be difficult if there was only one Toad, because I'd still have to be moving pieces all over the place and reusing pieces. So he crosses one place and now he's on another part of the map. And now I have to take that piece that he just crossed and try to get it down there so he can reuse it when he gets farther down. And that alone would be a challenge, and it would be a good challenge, but they throw me in the deep end with two at the same time and I have to share pieces between them. And I'm like, this is fucking crazy hard, like right off the bat.
Yeah.
And I feel like, did I miss a tutorial here? Like, is this a mechanic that shows up really early in other modes and I just haven't played those stages yet? I don't know what the fuck's going on, but like, I was like, dude, this is crazy.
Well, yeah. And we were both chatting on Skype and I was like, I can't think of a way to say this that wouldn't make me look like an asshole. But it's not that hard. Like, I you know, like you told me...
L2P? Is that what you're going to say, Guillaume?
Huh?
L2P? Learn to play?
Oh, maybe. I've never heard that before. Yeah,
I'm trying.
But
I mean,
that specific puzzle, like you told me which one it was, and I went back and I tried it again. I was like, yeah, the pieces just fall into place almost by themselves for me. Like, eventually, like, the puzzle is solved. So I'm not sure what I'm doing differently, but it's just, like, it works. And sadly...
Well,
if I wasn't
up against the clock, I could definitely solve it. But I'm trying to make all this happen in a very short period of time because the characters keep on moving. They just march from the beginning to the end. And so you have to do all this stuff while... And so it really feels like there's a lot of time pressure. And I don't know. I mean, it's probably one of those things, maybe you can solve it in two moves. And it's really easy if you find exactly the correct solution. And maybe I'm making it way too hard on myself and I'm moving the pieces way too much. But it's not transparent to me what the hell's going on. And I just feel like maybe there was like an easier version of this that could have been a nice interim step to like build me up to solving this more complex challenge here. But there's not.
And unfortunately, like the rest of the levels after that, they all got these sliding tiles and
really?
They don't get easier.
Jesus.
So like at least for like the next 20 puzzles. So I don't know, like there must be something that you're missing. Like my only advice is like there is usually a way that you can funnel both toads on the same track, and from there
I did that, but then they would bump into each other and then go off back in the opposite direction.
But you funnel them, like I mean you lead them to the same path, but
yeah,
you
and
don't.
I did that. I did that once or twice, but then it still felt like. I had spent so much time trying to get them on the same path. I didn't have enough time or enough pieces to actually make that path go anywhere that it was supposed to go. So, I mean, I felt like I was getting at least halfway there. But anyway, I was just shocked. It's not that I'm surprised there are hard puzzles in the game. I'm surprised that it came this early in that one mode and that there's nothing to kind of build up to it, you know?
I don't suppose you've played the DSiWare game Link and Launch.
No.
No, you're the only person who's played that game.
I never heard of it.
No, it was like one of the more high-profile DSiWare games. I mean, it was from Nintendo themselves, and it was one of the early ones, so people were still paying attention. It's pretty damn good, but it's exactly that. It's exactly the same type of puzzle, so I don't know. Maybe you should get it so that you can train for Mario and Donkey Kong, or you should avoid it at all costs because you're...
No, I think I'm going to avoid it and never, ever think of that game ever again. But I mean, the good news is here, you know, this is a game where if you're stuck on a puzzle, you can totally just skip to the next one, just like in Pushmo or Crashmo. So there's no reason to just get super upset at one puzzle and make that a huge roadblock. You can always just skip and play other levels. It sounds like in this mode, I'm probably not going to enjoy the rest of the mode, but it's still less than a fourth of the entire game. So I'm playing other modes. I'm still enjoying them a lot. And there's lots and lots and lots of stages in every mode. And there's these mini games too that do seem pretty fun, including the one that kind of plays like Cubello. So I still really like the game. I mean, there's that one stage where I'm just like, where did this come from? I was not expecting to get this hard this early, but for the most part, I'm still enjoying it. I just unlocked the Donkey Kong mode where they give you these giant maps and almost all the spaces on it are empty. And there's like little clocks hidden around there. And basically, you're trying to get from one corner to the other, but there's many, many different ways you could take to get there. And it gives you a lot of freedom to build your own path as long as that path goes through enough of these clocks that you can actually have enough time to get to the end. So
that one is giving me a lot of trouble.
Yeah. Those are tough. I did finally beat the first one, but it took me a few tries. I mean, there's some real challenge here, and I guess that's kind of the takeaway for it. But, I think it's really good. If you absolutely adore puzzle games, if you really like the other, especially if you like the Mario versus DK games on DS and DSi, those are probably a good sort of primer for what's going on here, even though this one is still different in its own way. But I'm still enjoying it quite a bit. So lots more content in there for me, and I still recommend it. So why don't we go back to you, Guillaume, and I know you had another brand new game that you wanted to talk about.
That I almost forgot that I played at all when we were planning for this episode, because I played it when it came out like 2 weeks ago now, and it lasted me about 2 hours, and it just, you know, didn't make much of an impression on me. It's the Starship Damry, one of the Guild O2 games, the first one that's come out.
Yeah.
And I was excited for this game. You know, like the trailers made it look very mysterious. The game starts with a disclaimer that you should not look up any info. You should try to, like, this is a game that you're supposed to explore at your own pace and that you're supposed to discover on your own. So, I didn't even check if there was a manual, but it probably doesn't say anything, right? A little bit like the manual for Tokitori 2. the game started out promising, I gotta say. Like, it starts out and you're basically stuck in this pod, and you're trying to get this computer to work, this computer terminal, and like, you pass some, you know, basic, you do some basic puzzle on the keyboard, and you're trying basically to fix the program, and once, you know, it turns out that you can't open your pod, then you take control of a kind of a remote robot. And so you're exploring the ship as that robot. And, you know, like, how much can I say about it? Like, I think first, the fact that you're exploring, you know, a ghostly ship or whatever as a robot kind of takes away some of the horror, you know, like it.
Yeah.
You're not directly in danger of anything. It's just like a remote robot, so it's not really, like, who cares? Also, like, I thought that the game would open up a little bit more, because in your pod, like, you're taking control of this one remote robot, but it shows you that there's 8 of them. And it kind of looks like perhaps you're going to be switching between them, but no, you remain in control of just the one. Throughout the whole game. And the robot is very limited. Like, you can only carry one item with you at all times. And not only that, but you can't drop it. So what that means is that once you've picked up an item, you know 100% as fact that this item is going to be solved, is going to be used to solve the next puzzle. So it makes the game incredibly linear. And, you know, like, the whole thing about, like, oh, figure this out for yourself. Well, actually, the game holds your hand a whole lot and will give you very, very obvious clues as to what you're supposed to do next. And if you're trying to pick an item that you're not supposed to pick up yet, it's going to tell you. It's going to say, like, hey, shouldn't you be doing this instead? So really, like, the game doesn't live up to the promise of, you know, like, oh, this is a mysterious game and, like, figure it out on your own. Like, it's really, like, we're going to feed you all the answers as you go, and you don't really have to think too much about it. And yeah, like, the puzzles, not only are they easy, but they're not exactly the type of puzzle that I appreciate in the adventure games, because really they're just, like, kind of observation puzzles. Like, you'll find your road obstructed by a whole bunch of debris. Well, you have to find the one spot in that pile of debris that you can interact with, you know, like, and that's basically the puzzle. It's like, yeah, I don't know. Like, it's really not satisfying as a puzzle game. It's not really satisfying as a mystery. I guess the story has some neat twist to it, but it was ultimately disappointing, you know. One of the weird things is that it's trying to build itself up as a horror game, but then in some key points you've got cutscenes where you see your robot and it's just like clowning around. There's like two very, very goofy references to two, you know, very high profile science fiction movies, and in both of them it's just the robot doing goofy shit. And it's really like, I guess there is, you know, place in a horror story for some humor, but we're talking like Airplane kind of comedy here. Like, it doesn't fit. It's so weird.
Yeah, it's too goofy versus the tone of the game.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're, you know, very obvious pop culture references, and they basically, like, they made my eyes roll more than anything. You know. So yeah, like, it was a disappointing game. Like, I can live with the fact that it was short. I mean, you know, like, $8 for 2 hours. The way I look at it, it's still cheaper than going to the movies.
Yeah. With these Guild 01 and 02 games, we're kind of learning to expect that too, right?
Yeah.
These are all really short.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on the game. I mean, but $8 for 2 hours is pressing up against that movie window. Because, I mean, I can go to a two-hour movie for $10.
Yeah. So I can live with the fact that it was short, but I did not expect the game to be boring. And
I do wonder if it's just difficult to make a game where you're alone on a spaceship more as the premise of the game not be somewhat dull.
Come on, it's a fucking spaceship. Like, it should be more interesting than that.
I mean, yeah, it's all atmosphere, right? If they're not setting the atmosphere correctly, then it's not going to be effective.
I think the isolation game, it only really works if A, you have atmosphere, and B, it changes. Because you really have to cast the atmosphere as a character.
Yeah, I mean, it has to build up to something.
The game that I could think of most recently that I played that does the whole you're alone shitty gameplay perspective is the games like Fragile Dreams, where the atmosphere is the other character. You're interacting with the world.
Yeah, I would say like Dead Space does a pretty good job.
The world needs to evolve as you play through.
Yeah, you have to feel like you're uncovering something as you go along.
Well, the game kind of tries to tell a story about the people who used to be on the ship or who are still on the ship, but you can't find them.
They're still there. They're just
it doesn't really go very much into depth. Like, you will basically find an entry journal where you see like one guy complaining about another, and that's the entire characterization that you're gonna get. Like, you get this one detail, like, so and so doesn't like this other guy, and this happened today. Also, I had ravioli, and we're nearing Earth. Ooh, you know, and there's really no,
chilling.
But there's like not enough formation there to get me to care, really.
Right.
And then like you finish the game, and then there's like some sort of info dump about like what just happened, and it's just not enough, you know. Like, you read that, and it's like, okay,
yeah,
I guess that was neat, but maybe the game was too short for its own good, and perhaps like you should have written a little bit more to get me to care first before, you know, telling me, you know, what actually happened.
So when this game was first announced, they called it a survival horror exploration other stuff game.
Yeah, but it's not. There's not as much text as there was in 999, and I liked 999 enough, I guess, but I was ultimately disappointed with it just because of the way you had to repeat a lot of things over and over again. But at least 999 was interesting, and its story,
it was going somewhere.
Yeah, yeah, and this fails to become interesting at any point, and. Like, even the puzzles, which I was not a fan of in 999, were still way more elaborate and made more sense than what we get in Starship Damry. And there's no, like, survival horror here. Like, there's no danger at any point, at any time. And I guess the horror comes from listening to the audio, I suppose. Like because
there's multiple ways to read into that statement.
No, but it's just like you'll get creepy sounds. Ooh, like creepy sounds, amazing. You there's like I think 15 or 20 space leeches in the ship, and you can exterminate them, but they don't seem to present a threat, and they're about as big as a leech, and it's never really explained, like, why they're such a big deal or whatever. Like, it's just like, hey, a space leech. It makes this screaming sound when you're near one.
Ew.
So I guess it's a little bit startling, but you know, you get over that pretty quickly. So, yeah, like, Johnny, like, you talked about space recently. How come you didn't say anything about space leeches?
About space leeches? Yeah, well, we still don't know much about them, Guillaume.
The public needs to know.
They sound kind of like Skulltulas, but maybe without the endearing story conceit of why you might need to catch them.
Yeah. Yep, that's actually pretty much it, yeah.
All right. Well, before we wrap up new business, I'll talk about one other game, and I won't have to spend too much time on it because there ain't a whole lot to say. That is Uncharted Golden Abyss. This is the PlayStation Vita Uncharted game, and I got it for free with my PlayStation Plus account, of course, because almost all my Vita games are free. Like,
hell, I got the game for free, and I don't have a Vita.
Really? Oh, yeah, because you just get it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you have Plus. Well, I mean, if you have it and you have a Vita, it is certainly worth playing, I think. But, you know, I remember this was Sony's big kind of marquee launch title for the Vita. And I remember reading the reviews when it first came out. And everybody was like, well, they certainly did put Uncharted on a handheld, but it's definitely not the best Uncharted. And it's definitely not something you absolutely have to play. And I completely agree. I mean, as an Uncharted game, it has everything that you expect from an Uncharted game, except that it's just not very fresh or interesting.
I mean, I had somebody describe it to me as paint by numbers.
Yeah, it's very formulaic. And, you know, I think Uncharted 3, for instance, I think all the Uncharted games are formulaic to some extent. Mm-hmm. But the console games are far enough apart when they come out, and they're different enough in setting and in story that it kind of works anyway, even though you kind of expect them to go to some hidden city at the end and some magical shit happen, or some supernatural dudes come out and then you're going to have to fight them, and the guns don't work as well against them, and at some point you're going to get some kind of explosive weapon that's a lot more fun to use, but it won't have enough ammo, and it'll kind of get you through some crazy stuff, and then there'll be a point where you're riding some kind of moving vehicle and you have to shoot dudes and then kind of jump around a little bit onto other moving things. I mean, they pretty much all have that, and it's always mm-hmm. fun to some extent, although I think all three Uncharted games go on a little bit too long and repeat themselves a little bit too much in terms of the action the action scenes. And sometimes it feels like they're just kind of throwing a different coat of paint on the same thing. But the coat of paint is so pretty that maybe you don't mind. And the story in all three Uncharted games is interesting. The stuff mm-hmm. that you're doing, you know, with the other characters, the way that you interact with those characters, and the ups and downs and the twists and turns and the uncertainties about, is this a good guy or a bad guy? Or, you know, is she really interested in Drake, or are they just kind of flirting, or does she actually kind of hate him? There's interesting layers to the storytelling in these games, and the Vita game just isn't quite hitting on all cylinders when it comes to all of the above that I just talked about. The presentation is good, but it's not as good for certain. The writing feels a little half-hearted in a lot of cases. The sexual tension really isn't there. They introduce a new female character. I guess maybe this is meant to be a prequel, because they don't talk about Elena, who really is a very central character through the three games on PS3. So they don't talk about her, and there's this other female character, but they don't really seem to have a whole lot of romantic interest, which is okay, except she's not very likable as a character. She's kind of whiny and just super obsessed with her grandfather. She talks about her grandfather nonstop, and it gets really old. And, you know, I haven't finished the game, but it definitely feels like we're heading towards some long-lost, legendary, mythical city of gold, just like you always do in Uncharted.
How many fucking City of Golds are there?
Yeah, apparently four.
Until the next game comes out.
At least four.
Then there's five.
I think in this one, it's probably an abyss, actually.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it's called Golden Abyss, but I've been playing this game for like 10 hours. I still haven't seen a Golden Abyss. I haven't heard anyone talk about a Golden Abyss.
It'll be the very last area, I guarantee. Just like Uncharted 3, where like whatever, what was it, Shangri-La, I think, was the final place.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
The city under the sand or whatever.
You know, and it's a fun formula, but it feels like they've done it too many times in too few years. And you know, it's been, probably a year and a half since I played Uncharted 3, and I still feel like it's a little fresh on my mind for me to be playing this game again, and for this game to do nothing different at all, you know.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even have the really big epic set pieces that kind of stick out in your mind, like, you know, trying to ride a Jeep up into the back of a plane that's taking off, or climbing around on a train as it rattles through the Himalayas or something like that. Just, you know, going through trying to run through a burning house and escaping from it. It doesn't really have any of that stuff. It has a jungle scene at the beginning that's very impressive. But then after that, everything I've done since then is all kind of dark environments that aren't a whole lot to look at. You know, and there's still plenty of shooting, and I think the shooting works fine on Vita. The joysticks probably don't feel as good as the PS3 ones, which are not as good for shooting games as the Xbox controller is, but it's good enough. It's not a big problem, and the touchscreen stuff for climbing around is actually kind of nice. You can just kind of trace your finger over a pathway, and Drake will just kind of climb and follow that stuff, and I think that's a nice feature. But like some of the other stuff where I did a scene where I found a sword and it wanted me to do charcoal rubbings of all the different like engravings on the sword, but the sword had so many different pieces, they made me do it in 6 different sections. So I had to play this incredibly simplistic minigame where you just wipe your finger over the screen until the whole rubbing is complete, and to do that 6 times in a row. That's not a good idea. I mean, it's really, really tiresome by the end of that. So a lot of these little mini games that they've tried to put in to take advantage of the Vita features are not good at all, but it's still Uncharted. It's still a very likable character, and the banter and the climbing mechanics are really fun. The gunplay is fine.
Would you say that this is like the Crystal Skull of the series?
No, I mean, it's not that outlandish. I mean, in some sense, all the Uncharted games are as outlandish as Crystal Skull, probably. But it's not that markedly different. It's just, that's kind of the biggest problem. It's just not very different from the PS3 games, but it lacks a lot of the grandeur of a huge, big-budget console game that is really the main reason people play Uncharted. It's not because they love Nathan Drake or because they love shooting 1,000 dudes and then still coming across as like an innocent playboy. I think people like Uncharted games because they're ridiculously lavish, you know, and they take you to these insane exotic locations and they put you in these crazy action scenes that really do feel right out of a movie. And you just don't really get that sense of scope from the Vita game, even though it's mechanically, it's doing all the same things. I mean, you certainly can't say this is not an Uncharted game. It absolutely is an Uncharted game in every sense of the word, but it seems to lack that kind of, that gloss that the console games have that makes them really stand out from other third-person shooters, which is effectively what they are. So anyway, it's a good enough time, and at this point, I think it's still free if you join PlayStation Plus. So if you have a Vita, dude, friggin' play it. I mean, you're probably not going to pay $50 for it, right? But it's easily the worst Uncharted game, easily. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, well, that's going to wrap up this segment. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we've got E3 predictions. We're going to talk about demos at Best Buy. We might even squeeze in a little bit of listener mail if there's time. So stick around.
Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, now playing at NintendoWorldReport.com.
This week we have a blog, a love letter to portable Zelda games by Justin Baker. Imagine an alternate reality where your older siblings got to play all the console Zelda games and you were relegated to the Game Boy entries of the series. Turns out, it isn't that dark of a timeline.
Very timely with the Oracle games coming out.
Yes.
We've got a roundtable, Game & Wario. Besides a fart-themed parody of Kickstarter, there isn't a lot to get excited about Game & Wario. Or is there? Or Steph isn't entirely sure. There isn't.
No.
There really isn't.
Yeah.
Next up, we have an interview about Gunman Clive with Bertel Horberg. Nintendo World Report got to chat with the Gunman Clive developer to discuss how he got into making games, his experience working on different platforms, and maybe a word or two, or just two, about his next project, a game inspired by The Legend of Zelda. And we have a review for Groove Heaven by Josh Max. This is on the 3DS eShop, It's a rhythm game where you are a demon delivering a love letter from the devil to the heavenly goddess. Well, that's sacrilegious. Good thing it's a pretty solid rhythm game.
Also this week we have a feature, Dungeons & Dragons Arcade Games and Education by Andy Gergen. Capcom is re-releasing a pair of Dungeons & Dragons themed brawlers that Capcom released into the world of Ninja Turtles and Final Fighting. Andy offers a historical primer to contextualize these brawlers for huge nerds.
And in case you don't get enough of his opinions on this show, we have an editorial by James Jones. It is entitled, On Predictions, Introspections, and Group Psychology, The Fan and Fanatic.
That's an awesome title.
It is. That sounds quite
serious.
That's
part of the article's the title.
It sounds quite serious, James. Did you know sometimes it's hard to write about how you feel about gaming news? It's super hard. Take an alarming look into how James contextualizes Star Wars, EA, and Sonic news.
Do I have to?
I don't know about that one, James. I don't know.
It's easily the strangest thing I've ever written for the site.
James is a good writer. You should definitely go check that out.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
So, of course, you can check out James's editorial, all the other stuff we talked about, and much more over at NintendoWorldReport.com. And also, I wanted to ask everybody, if you enjoyed the Nintendo Pirate Radio from last week, you can hear a lot more from that gang of idiots, me included, and all the crazy stuff we did while they were here in Colorado, because we recorded 4 podcasts in 3 days, and that was just one of them. The rest are over at crosstalk.com. So please go visit both NintendoWorldReport.com and crosstalk.com with a W. Welcome back to the show. It's time for E3. Almost. It's almost time for E3. It is just about a week away by the time you hear this show. My God. And we are going to talk about some E3 stuff. And first off, just some recent developments, something that's happened between the last time the four of us were together and this episode, is that Nintendo announced at their last Nintendo Direct, their kind of pre-E3, mostly 3DS-focused Nintendo Direct, they said that they were going to be bringing select E3 demos to Best Buy stores around the United States. I don't know if they're... Are they in Canada, Guillaume? Or is it just U.S.?
Yeah, actually, no. They leaked out like 21 locations in Canada the Best Buy Facebook page or Nintendo's Facebook page. Nintendo okay. Canada's Facebook page.
Okay, well, that's good. Yeah. So, Canada 2 and... you know, and of course, this happened like the day after we recorded a show where we said, you know, they'll probably never do it because of X, Y, and Z. And it would be really nice if they did it. And it'd be really nice if they put them on the eShop.
Billy. Yeah, it's a Berghammer guy.
Yeah, that bastard.
I think we all contributed different aspects of the discussion. But I you know, I've been saying for years I would love for them to do this. I just kind of don't think it's going to happen.
I'm going to hit the pause button real quick and point out that this is actually somewhat close to something I predicted at the start of the year and then totally fucked up later in the year. But we're going to go ahead and take credit for it anyway.
Yeah, you should. So anyway, you know, on the Nintendo Direct, they didn't give too many details. They just said some of our demos will be playable at Best Buys around the country. And that is technically true. We still don't know what demos, of course, because it might be for games that haven't even been announced as of today's recording. But, you know, it certainly sounds like it will be some subset of the demos they'll have at E3. Right. I don't think you're going to be going there. I'm guessing because they're probably going to, you know, these are very limited time that these are going to be available in the store. They're probably going to have people there kind of monitoring them and like making sure that they work correctly. And also, you know, because they're expecting crowds, I'm sure it's probably going to be only a few demos, like maybe 2, 3, 4 demos to pick from that you can play.
My guess is it was going to be one game that is a big holiday game, probably the 3D Mario game.
Yeah.
And then the rest would be games that are pretty close to coming out.
Yeah, I could see that. And, you know, of course, we don't know for sure yet. That's our speculation right now. But I know when they announced this on the Nintendo Direct, I thought, well, that is definitely the most exciting thing to come out of that Nintendo Direct, in my opinion. And I thought it was one of the biggest stories of the year so far, because this is just something that no one really does. Like, no one lets the general public play E3 demos outside of E3. And I thought it was really forward thinking and really innovative of Nintendo. It's something, again, I've been hoping they would do for a long time. I just didn't think it would ever really happen. And here it is. It's going to happen. And I thought, you know, although it would be really awesome for them to put these on eShop, we've gone over the reasons why they probably won't do that. It would be awesome if they were going to do that. But I thought, you know, putting them in Best Buy is smart, because Best Buy is a national chain. It's really a continental chain. You know, it's in Canada too. And they're almost everywhere. You know, it's not that hard to go find a Best Buy. It's not rare like a, it's not even as rare as like a Costco or a, you know, a Fred Meyer. It's not a regional thing. They're really very evenly distributed and very widespread stores. And I thought, putting these demos in the store is smart, because they're really trying to get people's attention who don't have access to the eShop, people who don't own the console yet. That's the people that they really need to show the new 3D Mario and the new whatever, you know, like really exciting big games of E3. So putting it in Best Buy is smart, because they can get people to, if it's a, you know, if it's a big enough story, if they can really get interest in it, they can get people to the stores, try the demo, and say, wow, I really want a Wii U now that I've played these awesome games that are coming out in 6 months. Oh, hey, there's a stack of Wii U's here. I can buy one now and take it home and play it.
Yeah, but the thing is, it is a very limited subset of the Best Buys. So we have 7 in town, and only...
Well, yes, we found that out today.
And only one of them is going to get it.
Yeah. So Neil did the numbers. It's less than 10% of the Best Buy stores in North America are getting these demos.
It surprised me, because the two that are around here, like, I'm downtown, and they didn't pick either one. The ones they picked are in Smyrna, which is northwest of the city, and Duluth, which is northeast of the city. And they're quite far away from me. The Smyrna one is 12 miles away. The Duluth one is 20 miles away. So I'm like – and I mean, I have Best Buys, like – 5 miles away. There's one just a couple miles away from me.
Well, that's what you get for living in such a small city, John.
I know. Atlanta. It's a little village. God, but it's home, you know? It's home.
Yeah. Hey, I think, John, I mean, compared to most people, you're pretty lucky that you're only going to have to go 12 miles to the to the nearest store where they have these demos. Because there are entire states. I mean, the stores that were announced today that are going to have these E3 demos – only exist in 60% of the states of the United States. There's a, like, if you live in New Hampshire, fuck you. You're gonna have to drive to another fucking state to go play these games. If you live in Montana or, I mean, place like Wyoming and Montana and North Dakota, maybe you would expect that. But, I mean, states like New Mexico, not an unpopulated place. I've been to New Mexico. There's a shitload of people there. Yeah, Albuquerque is a big ass city, and there's not a single Best Buy in Albuquerque that you could take these demos to. Yeah. Really? Because I tell you what, New Mexico is also fucking humongous. It is not a trivial thing to drive from a big city in New Mexico to another state just so you can go play demos.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say about New Hampshire. I mean, that state's about 10 feet wide, so... You know, you pretty much like step outside your door and you're practically in Boston.
Okay,
so,
well, maybe it's not as big a deal for them, but some of these places are really far away.
Still a pain,
away.
Though. I mean, you're still going to have to drive a while. You know, all jokes aside, you're still going to have to drive like to some other state, which is pretty silly.
I mean, you know? I want to say there's only like 3 or 4 in Virginia. There's more than 3 or 4 metro areas you could probably support this in. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have the coast, which is multiple million people, and you have Northern Virginia, which is about 10 million people.
Yeah, the only other ones here, I think. One. Yeah, the only other ones in Georgia are Augusta and Savannah.
Which, and, I mean, it makes sense; those are the three cities they target. But that's not geographically distributed amongst the state.
I mean,
that
Georgia's
much.
A big state. Mm-hmm. You know,
there's like big holes in that map.
Yeah.
Well, like Athens.
Why would they not do that at every store? Is it because there's an actual Nintendo rep at each and every one of them, or what?
I can almost guarantee you there's an actual Nintendo rep at every single one of these. Because there's only 89 stores in the U.S. that are getting these.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
So my guess is it's that, and also Nintendo's bringing their own Wii U's to this thing. Because they're probably going to be non-production units.
Yeah, they're going to be lockboxes, because they don't want people stealing the demo discs, right?
Yeah, I'm going to walk in there and be like, where's the Cube Club?
Nice. Yeah, I mean, it probably really just comes down to logistics. It's probably the most they could manage. Yeah. So they had to be hyper-selective. So they probably, I mean, I'll be honest, it was probably driven in part by hitting the right demographics and by what best individual sales numbers at Best Buy locations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They probably went to Best Buy and said, pick us. We have 89 locations. Pick them.
Yeah.
I got to say, as a quick aside, that's pretty smart of Best Buy as well, because they're often, like, in the business press, like, the business press tells of Best Buy's troubles. They call it Amazon's showroom and stuff like that. Well, there's no Wii U's being sold in Amazon. So.
True. Yeah, it's very true. Yeah, they have the advantage there of being a brick and mortar to actually show that product.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Yep.
So we're in a weird situation here. Like, I know my friend Mike Sklens, who was just over here with the other Crosstalk guys over the weekend and was on the last episode of the show, he was flipping out this morning when we got this news, because he thinks it's really stupid of Nintendo to only send it to such a very small fraction of the stores around the country, and it's going to make it very hard for a lot of people to go play these demos. And I think I sympathize with that. At the same time, I mean, some people are going to get to play E3 demos, whereas last year nobody got to play them, right? So
right.
It's better. Even if they half-ass this, and it sounds like they kind of are half-assing this whole thing, they're really not doing it the way that we would like to see them do it, which is to kind of make it this big event where people all over the country can really go try this stuff out and get excited about Wii U. You know, it's still more than Microsoft and Sony are going to be able to pull off this year. So, mm-hmm. You know, I think there's something to be said for it. I don't want to take the steam out of Nintendo completely, because I still think it's very cool that they're doing this at all. But I do wish they were doing it better than they're doing it. And I think the reason that it's such a small number of stores just comes down to logistics. It comes down to them being control freaks. It comes down to them, you know, not wanting to spend a ton of money to send out special systems to every single store. And I understand there's going to be some priority, and I never thought that every Best Buy was going to get it. But, I mean, not every Best Buy has a Wii U kiosk now, period.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, not every store is exactly the same. But I thought it would be more than 10% of the stores. And I thought they would try to have at least one in every state at a bare minimum. So this seems kind of pathetic the way they're doing it. And then I guess I heard that they're only going to be in there for like 2 days.
Something like that, yeah.
So you have a very, like, and that's going to be probably during the week, right? Because E3 is Tuesday through Thursday.
Yeah.
So
it'll probably be Wednesday and Thursday.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. It's going to be a very, very limited amount of time. And hey, if you like work for a living, or, you know, maybe you can't plan a road trip to the other side of the state in the middle of the week because you have kids or something, you're not even going to get to play these at all. And if they make it so hard for people to play the demos that people don't get to play them, then they really don't get any credit for making them available at all.
Well, I think that's a bit reductionist, because ultimately a lot of people are going to play these demos that would have not played them in last year's conditions.
Mm-hmm. I hope so, but it also comes down to the way that they kind of the way that they market this opportunity, you know, the way that they spread the word. Because if the only people who are willing to find that one Best Buy that has the demos are Nintendo fans who already own the system and just want to learn about the games, then I think they're missing a massive golden opportunity to introduce people to the really cool Wii U games that are upcoming and get them to buy a console.
Yeah, I mean, from a selfish standpoint, I hope that nobody knows about this.
Yeah,
but
exactly, right?
I mean, from their standpoint, they need people going to the Best Buy for the express purpose of playing it. Now, granted, I expect that for them, the target here is foot traffic. They'd want to get people who are coming into the store to divert from whatever they were there for to try the system out. People who mm-hmm. are the uninitiated.
Yeah, but I just wonder how much foot traffic a Best Buy would, like, just your average Best Buy would get.
So it depends. So the Best Buy they picked here gets a lot of foot traffic on weekdays because people go during lunch.
Yeah.
It's. I mean, if you go there on the weekdays, it's busy. You're going to have to wait in line if you're buying something. But one of the ones they passed up on, the one near me, is pretty much a dead zone for foot traffic, except for like on weekends. So they probably picked their stores based on foot traffic information.
I'm sure they did, yeah. Mm-hmm. And just population density, and, you know, they're trying to get the most out of limited resources. But I don't know, man. I do, just to get to something you said, James, I think there's going to be really long lines to play these demos.
I think there is, and that's going to suck. Because
all the people who are interested in playing them are being funneled into a very small number of stores, I think it's going to be really... But you're going to have to wait.
It's just replicating the E3 experience.
The E3 lines are usually two or three people deep. You know, they're not that bad.
Except for that one year they only had one... the one Metroid game. Yeah, we're only going to have one Metroid demo unit.
Yeah, that was dumb.
Yeah.
to say the least.
We're assuming Nintendo's controlling here, but Best Buy may be playing a role in this too. Maybe they don't want to have to deal with having all the upstaffing at multiple locations. I mean,
it could be, but I feel like the staff to run these demos are probably being provided by Nintendo.
Maybe.
I don't know, it'll be interesting.
I would guess it's at least 50-50, because Best Buy absolutely needs people in their doors right now.
Yeah. Well, James, I know you're going to be taking advantage of this since you're not going to E3, and
right.
I'm very curious to hear your impressions of what the experience was like. I mean, I'm old enough to remember going to a Cube Club. In fact, I went there with John back in Atlanta a long, long time ago. Mm-hmm. And that was fun. And of course, there were only a few Cube Clubs around the country, and they would do them in like five cities one weekend, and then all those people would get up and travel to different cities, and the next weekend they do it in five other cities. And it was like, you know, I think it was okay, because also Cube Club was this event. Like, this was a destination, and it was okay to travel because they had so many demos. You could hang out there for hours. They had prizes. They had all this other stuff going on, and it was a little bit different. It wasn't like just going up to a demo kiosk and getting your 5 minutes and then being shushed out of there, you know, which is what I'm afraid is going to happen. Like,
yeah.
These demos won't be very long. There probably won't be very many of them that you're allowed to try. And even if you just get right back in line, I have a bad feeling that some people are going to feel like they drove 6 hours to go play the new Mario and didn't really get their time's worth out of it.
Yeah,
you know?
I think it's going to be kind of chaotic. I mean, you hit the nail on the head with the Cube Clubs. You know, it was, you could spend as much time there as you wanted.
Yeah.
Right.
You could play every demo five times, and they had 10 or 20 demos to play too.
Yep.
All on separate units. So, you know, they could support a lot of people at once.
Yep. And it was also, I think it was also downtown. So pretty much it was sort of near, I mean, you know, everybody had the same kind of the same place to go.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I have to give Nintendo praise for doing this at all, but I'm not sure they're doing it the right way. But we'll see. I mean, I won't get a chance to do it. I'll be at E3. Guillaume will be there. John and James will be checking out the Best Buy demos, and we'll get to compare notes afterward. We'll see what it was like. I hope it's awesome. You know, I hope they have every demo there, and they let you stay in there and play as long as you want. And they have three units at every store, so they can get through a lot of people and give everybody plenty of time to play it. I'm pessimistic about the experience that you're going to have, but at least you will get to play a game of some kind.
Yes, obviously I'd love to be able to play them from the comfort of my own home, because I took a few days off for E3 anyway.
Yeah.
And, you know, doing home team stuff, that would be super fucking convenient.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But,
take a lot of pressure off those of us at the show.
Yeah. It'd probably take a lot of pressure off the site as well, unfortunately. I'm glad that I'll get a chance to play something. Now, my guess is it won't be the most exciting stuff. My guess is that the best and the brightest demos and the most surprising demos will probably still be only at the show.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm fairly confident that unless Mario isn't coming out this year, it'll be there. Maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
Too. Wind Waker remake will be there. And then, I don't know, Pikmin.
Yeah, I think Mario would have to be there.
Yeah, I think it probably is. I think it's probably like the Wind Waker remake, and maybe Pikmin, because Pikmin won't be out yet, will it?
No, no.
And then maybe Wonderful 101. I mean, they've already shown that demo publicly, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I would think to bring people in, they would have to say, hey, you can play the new Mario game, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's an easy sell for most people.
And, you know, I don't need to, if the Zelda remake's there, that's great. I want to see it. I don't really care that much about playing it. I know how to play Wind Waker. I've played it a million times.
Yeah.
The Wonderful 101 was playable at public events.
Right, that's what I'm saying. They've already shown that demo publicly, so they could certainly just show it again.
The demo that you're talking about that they've shown publicly is last year's E3 demo.
Do you really put it past them
probably
to show that demo
again?
Probably
not the best way to present it.
No, I'm sure that these demos will be more recent for more for newly announced games. Like I don't expect Pikmin 3 because, like, come on.
No, they'll show Pikmin 3. There's no doubt Pikmin 3 will, because the game will be coming out pretty soon after the event. They want people to buy games.
I mean, pretty soon, isn't it coming out like in September?
Well, relatively
soon. It's not
soon.
That soon.
Well,
but
compared to stuff on the Wii U,
it is probably the first major Wii U game coming out after E3, and I think they will want to show it for that reason.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think they're going to put more emphasis on games that are coming out sooner because they want you to buy a console now, not wait till December and buy a console.
Cool. Okay. Well, why don't we segue into predictions?
Oh, boy.
I hope you guys have been doing your homework and putting together some fun things here.
Hell no.
Yeah, don't count on it.
I look forward to all your wrong answers, gentlemen.
Metroid Prime 4.
So I kind of had carved this up into a few different categories, and we'll see, you know, what people kind of came up with. But this is an annual tradition. We like to do this. We've been doing it for a long time, I think. You know, E3, part of the fun is that it's full of surprises, and we go into it largely not knowing what we're going to be playing later in the day. And so we're going to do these predictions, and we'll go back to them afterward and laugh at how horribly idealistic and silly and naive we were. But I figured let's start out with game announcements. This is clearly the big impetus, especially for Nintendo, since they don't have a new system coming out this year. It's all about the games, and we really don't know very much about anything that's coming out after Pikmin in September. So, who wants to go first with a big game announcement prediction?
All right, well, I think the easy one to get out of the way would be Mario Kart Wii U. The question is, when is that guy coming? And I think that my prediction, and this is almost more of a hope, is that there will be, for Christmas, there will be a Mario Kart U, whatever they want to call it, Mario Kart U and Wii U bundle, preferably with the red Wii U. Come on, Nintendo.
Ooh.
Give it to me.
That'd be nice. Yeah.
That'd be awesome. But I think there will be a bundle with it.
So what are you hoping to get out of this game, John? I mean, they've already announced that Mario Kart is coming probably this year, but what do you think it's going to be? Do you think it'll be just kind of more of the same?
I am honestly, this is one of the cases where I'm honestly kind of okay with that. I do want a better online experience than the one that was on Wii. But I mean, my wife and I played the hell out of the one on Wii, and you know, we love that game, right? So,
yeah,
just kind of you know maybe some more new courses to play. You know, definitely some better online. Definitely. An improved online experience, one that doesn't constantly make you wait for absolutely no reason whatsoever.
You're waiting so you can play. That's
exactly
why you're waiting.
Exactly. It's like the worst. It's like,
so you shut the fuck up and wait.
Yep.
So, like, wasn't there a tweet from a Sumo Digital guy, the guys who made Sonic and All-Star Racing, saying, like, oh, we'll finally know soon, which is the fastest kart racer or something like that.
I wouldn't put too much stock in there.
So do you think that perhaps we're going to see Mario Kart and Sonic and All-Star Racing transformed Wii U universe?
I don't know.
Honestly, no.
I don't think Nintendo would outsource that development to them anyway.
Take Mario Kart, to be honest with you, to have all that other stuff in there.
Well, I think what'll happen, Guillaume, and I think you're not completely wrong, because, you know, they announced this deal with Sega for 3 Sonic games exclusive to Nintendo platforms.
Right.
And we know 2 of them. One is Sonic and the Secret World, which
Sonic
was just shown
Secret
this
World.
Week, and it looks like basically Sonic Galaxy. And it looks pretty good. It looks fun. Mm-hmm. So we'll be finding out more about that at E3. And the other is the Olympics game, which, whatever.
Right.
And the third one's TBD. And I think it will be another racing game, because we did find out that the last one, Transform, sold best on Wii U, and they were very happy with it. And it's, you know, widely considered probably the best version. Maybe PC, you could argue. But it's a really great version. I mean, we were just playing it last weekend, even, you know, and everybody was immediately impressed with it. Everybody liked it right off the bat. I mean, it's a great game. It's just really great. I think they're definitely making another one, and I think that's probably the third game. But I don't think they're going to be able to get it out this year. That's just not enough time. And I think what they might do, I don't think Sumo is making Mario Kart, because I think Nintendo wants Mario Kart out sooner than they would be able to deliver it. And I think they were already working on it, too, when the Wii U launched. I think they probably had some team already on the case.
Oh, I'm sure they did.
But I think what might happen is that they might do kind of a trade. So you might get Sonic as a guest character in the new Mario Kart, and you might get Mario as a guest character in the next Sonic Racer game.
Yeah, I could see that.
Capcom cross Namco, Namco cross Capcom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which would be pretty cool. I'd be down for that.
I think so too. Yeah.
Yeah. So while we're on the subject of Mario Kart, one of my predictions was that Mario Kart will, I'm not saying this may not be the focus of the game, but I think it will at least support a feature where you can do double dash style co-op with one person using the gamepad to sort of be the support character while someone else uses the Wii Remote or a classic or a pro controller to do the driving. And I'm really hoping that would happen. We've talked a lot about how the double dash gameplay is sort of was a very successful experiment, and they seem to kind of drop it and move back to the more traditional style. And I'm waiting for them to go back to it. And I think with the gamepad, I keep feeling like there's a way to, you know, like playing Nintendo Land, you have all these asymmetric experiences where they have one person on the gamepad and another person using the remote. And they're, in some cases, working together to try to do something. I think this is a case where you could make really good usage of that, and it would help freshen up the Mario Kart formula and get people more interested in it.
See, to me, I was thinking about use for the tablet being more along the lines of environmental interaction. So if you take what they did with the New Super Mario Bros. U and then sort of flip it where the person with the tablet makes everyone's life more miserable instead of less. Because you have to keep in mind that it's one tablet for a game that is inherently a local multiplayer game in Nintendo's eyes. So you have to think about what could one person with the tablet do to interact with everyone else. And to me, it goes back to the fake Peter Molyneux Twitter. Have you ever played a racing game where you wanted to be the course? I know I have.
That's a great idea. That could be in there too. You know, I mean, it could be multiple things. But yeah, I'd like to see that. You know, in terms of the co-op mode, if they do it double dash style, I think one cool thing is the person who's on the gamepad, who's kind of being the support character, you could actually look in any direction while the other person always has the face forward angle, on the TV screen for driving. So you could actually turn around and look behind you and aim, you know, maybe even swipe with your finger to throw turtle shells, you know, and try to angle them at the guys behind you and take them out. Like it's not that hard to think of a lot of cool ideas that you could do with that. I just think it's too good of a fit. Like they have to do that.
Yeah. Being able to aim with, you know, with the pad would be great. You know, the thing is they could also add a whole bunch of new things, like, I don't know, like some sort of, you know, some sort of cannon where you could, you know, point it upwards and then shoot it.
I was going to say, like, a tank. Yeah. That would work really, really well.
Tank crossover. Done.
Yep. Yeah.
No, it would play better than that. But, I mean, like, using the gamepad, like someone just aiming with a cannon, using motion movement. Yeah, using motion. That would work really, really well, I think.
Yep. Or you could, like, you know, and to block that, you could have, you know, you could be able to bring up a shield. Or something like that. That'd be pretty cool.
Like shield pose.
Shield cart.
All right, James, did you have any game announcements that you want to predict?
Yeah, so I'm trying to think through my head what Nintendo still needs in their lineup. I think, obviously, we're going to see a lot of the two Sonic games we know.
Come on, Mystery Dungeon.
No, fuck you.
it's a big hole in their lineup.
No, it's not.
Hey, you know what? But a Pokemon Wii U game is kind of a big hole.
Yes, that is. But true. I think what we'll get is we'll get X and Y first for some amount of time, and then they'll give us a Colosseum-style game. I think we're probably due for one of those as it is.
Wasn't there, like, one of the press conferences that Nintendo was giving entirely about Pokemon?
It's all about X and Y.
Oh, okay.
Dude, I mean, let me tell you right now, Pokemon X and Y is the best-selling game of 2013.
Yeah, my prediction last year was it is the year of the Pokemon, and they went and pretended, they did a feint, said it's going to be the year of Luigi, but we all know better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, I don't know that Nintendo's, I mean, this is kind of a sad prediction, but I don't know that Nintendo's going to come out with anything to really just surprise the shit out of us. I mean, I think I think we see the new Mario game, and I think for them, that's sort of their big moment, even though they've already told us it's coming. I think we obviously they're going to show Wind Waker because it's coming out this year. They're going to show some of the stuff that's coming out sooner that's been at previous E3s because it's coming out sooner. And then I think really what you have left are what are the second parties doing? Or the people they have the long-term contracts with. What are the companies like Monster Games doing?
Weren't they the ones porting Donkey Kong Country Returns to 3DS?
They did, but I'm not sure that would have eaten up all their resources.
I think it probably did.
You think so?
They're not a huge studio.
Yeah, but my guess is that thing started as a tech demo anyway, so a lot of the work may have already been done for them. But, I mean, it's not necessarily them, but like, what are those smaller companies doing? And my guess is...
Next Level just finished, Luigi's Mansion 2. Yeah, I was trying to think of what the smaller studios were doing, and I can't imagine them...
So Goodfeel's probably doing Yoshi right now. I mean, I think there's not a lot of places surprises to come out of, except for maybe Retro. And I don't know... I've gotten so sick of getting in the Retro prediction game at this point that I don't even want to get involved.
That's why I was joking at the start. I'm like, Metroid Prime 4, Metroid Prime 4, or whatever.
Because at this point, fuck if I know. I mean, it wouldn't... Do I expect them to show stuff at E3? Yes, I expect Retro's next game to be there. Would I be stunned or shocked or even remotely surprised if they just silence on their end? Not really. And it's sort of sad that's my prediction, but I don't...
Really? You're predicting that they...
No, I'm saying...
they might not show anything.
That they might not. I mean, at this point, I don't know. I really don't...
I think they have to. I think... I mean, Reggie and everybody has been saying, wait till E3, wait till E3. Yeah. And I think they absolutely have to.
I mean, to me, what I think you're going to see more of, I think you're going to see more... And it's weird because they keep saying that this is a North American targeted announcements. So it's hard for me to gauge, because what I expect you'll see is I expect you'll see probably a little bit more buy-in from Japanese publishers on 3DS front, and maybe some...
That's going to be my prediction.
Yeah.
Like the... I think that Tomodachi Collection might make it to the US, finally. You know,
that's
like
a big
one. Yeah, it's not terribly exciting, I guess, but, you know, like I see Don Koopman on Twitter just like having lots of fun with the game, and I don't think, you know, like it's a game that seems to be leveraging a lot 3DS street passes and stuff like that. I don't think he's street passing a whole lot of people with the game in Europe land. So
probably not.
Like there's like the whole like what is it called, like Vocaloid thing that I've, you know, that has been given as a reason why we might never see it over here. But I think that the Animal Crossing has Vocaloid stuff as well, right? And, you know, that came over.
I don't think that uses the actual Vocaloid software, though, or the...
Oh, okay.
Or the style of it.
But it had something like that, right?
Well,
like
Tetris Trackers did in Four Swords Adventure, and they did leave that mode out when they brought the game over to America. But that was many years ago, and I don't know. Yeah, it seems to me like that's a feature that if they can't figure out how to do it in English, they could maybe just turn it off and... If it's a good game, you would hope that, you know, it would still be worth getting even without.
And when
that.
You're playing a handheld, like most of the time when I'm playing 3DS, the sound is off anyway. So it's, you know, like it's not like a feature that the whole game hinges on. So, you know, like they can definitely leave it out.
I think it does add to the charm of that experience, though. So I think it would be a loss for that game. I mean, to me, what's hard is I don't know how Japanese-focused publishers are going to be represented in Nintendo's ecosystem. I think what you would see if they hadn't done this refocus is you'd probably see a additional commitment to the 3DS as a viable platform from Japanese publishers, and that may lead to some trickle over with some announcements for Wii U. But with the constant refrain of we're going to focus on what's coming to the American market, and even the additional sub comments along the lines of what is available, you know, this year or coming soon, I don't know how much we're going to get blown away by.
If I'm going to take a stab at the Retro thing, I guess like either we can guess that they're going to make some first person game, probably Metroid, or some, you know, I don't think they would do another 2D platformer, but that certainly was out of the left field when that was announced. So maybe. You know, why not? Maybe Star Fox. Like, it would make as much sense as anything else, except the fact that Star Fox has never had as much brand power as Donkey Kong has. But, you know, like, they I think that talent-wise, they could certainly handle it, and they could make a good Star Fox game.
Yeah. I mean, I think they could make a good F-Zero game or something. Like, you know, we've seen they've made excellent games in three completely different genres so far. Mm-hmm. So if you're included, you know, if they include the track designs that they did on Mario Kart 7. So it's very hard to pin down their expertise. I kind of hope they make, if not a Metroid Prime game, a game sort of in that vein that shares some characteristics, because I think that's something that they do that really nobody else does, certainly they don't do it nearly as well. Whereas I felt that their work on Donkey Kong Country Returns, although, you know, immaculate, it's just, I feel like there's a lot of other teams, especially around Nintendo, who do that kind of game really well already. And it's not that I want less 2D platformers, but I sure as hell want more first-person adventures in awesome sci-fi worlds, which I really don't give very much of. So,
I mean, ultimately, I think what we're stuck with is what did they want to do and what was Nintendo looking for in gaps in their software lineup.
Right.
And
right.
I think that may be where we struggle to figure out how – and I think that may be – the reason if they've gone so long and in the dark for so long is probably because they were figuring that out too.
Well, yeah. I mean, the one thing I will say is, I mean, probably the most obvious gap, first party gap for Nintendo is some sort of a competitive first person shooter, not necessarily a military style first person shooter, but even something like Team Fortress 2 or something like that.
Time Splitters, that, you know, something more lighthearted.
That is a huge gap for them. And it's something that they could, that everybody knows in the whole world that they could do really well. So I have to wonder.
Everyone knows Retro could do it, but you know, you have to remember that all of Retro's games are produced by someone at Nintendo in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
So Retro doesn't have a whole lot of autonomy, I think, in choosing their projects.
Yeah.
But even if they did, they'd have to get someone on board who is willing to kind of shepherd that sort of project, because Nintendo still does produce their games in a very hands-on way.
True.
And there's just not anyone at Nintendo in Japan who knows much about that kind of game. And it's hard for me to imagine that they're going to support something like that, you know, even though they might identify it as, well, you know, we could probably gain some market share if we were taken more seriously in this genre, but it's just not something we know how to do or that we have much confidence in.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, if they're serious about going after the Western market, that's an easy way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Not easy is the wrong word, but it's they would get a lot of bang for their buck.
Yeah, but I think Nintendo's decisions on what games to make are much more creatively driven than what does the market need right now.
Yeah, I think it's
in general, not always, but in general.
I don't know about that. I mean, I would disagree just because they're like, hey, we can make a lot of money with this Mario game. Let's put out yet another Mario game.
They can make a lot of money by putting out their own phone.
Look,
according to their investors, but they're not going to do that either.
New Super Mario Bros. U was a creative experience. That New Super Mario Bros. 2 was also a creative experience.
There was a creative experience with those two games combined.
Yes.
So I've got a pretty. I'm not gonna dive into the Retro topic anymore because I've done it too many times, and you know.
Yeah,
when you
that's basically why I've given
up. When you predict five different things that they might be working on, at least four of those are going to be wrong. So probably all five. I've got a game that we haven't talked about in a long time, and that's We Fit You. And that game was supposed to come out like in the spring of this year. Obviously, it didn't do that. It also hasn't shown up in any of the more recent Nintendo Directs where they're kind of trying to get a little bit deeper into the so-called launch window games that were delayed into summer. And I think there's a reason for that. I don't just think it's because, you know, they felt their schedule was too crowded or that they didn't have enough resources to work on We Fit You. I think they're trying to relaunch this game a little bit.
Perhaps as a Kirby game?
No, not as a Kirby game. But even at E3 last year when they showed off Wii Fit U, it seemed like something that was kind of obvious that they had to do, but to me it didn't feel like they had a whole lot of ideas about how they would incorporate the gamepad or how this would be different than the last Wii Fit. And they've already made two of these, and the second one really wasn't a huge upgrade over the first one in the first place. And, you know, and the thing here is I think in a lot of cases they're going to be trying to resell you on the balance board, which is a peripheral that, you know, you're familiar with, but you may have gotten rid of, you may have thrown it away or given it to someone. I gave mine to my parents, or you might have sold it off. And if they're going to make a game that requires this on a new system, they're going to have to make this really compelling in order to get you to actually buy that expensive hardware all over again. And I don't know that what they showed at E3 last year was really that. It seemed like a kind of mild expansion pack over the things they'd already done. And I think that's a lot harder to sell than you might realize.
They may have been misinformed by their experience with Wii Fit U and Wii Fit Plus?
Yeah.
I think that was a bad experience for them. I think it was successful, but I think ultimately it taught them the wrong lessons. And I do wonder if after the reaction they got, they thought, we should rethink this whole thing.
Yeah.
Because I think it showed them you can get away with kind of doing an expansion pack where you flap your arms like a chicken.
That is a really fun part of that game, trust me.
It is the only fun part of that game.
It's awesome. But here's my prediction. I think Wii Fit U is being rebranded to combine it with Wii Sports. And I think it's going to be rebranded and relaunched at E3, probably coming out later this year or early next year as some, might be called Wii Fit Sports or Wii Sports Fit or whatever. Stick a U in there somewhere. I don't care.
Wii Sports Gym Edition.
But essentially it would combine motion control with the Wii Remote like Wii Sports. It would combine the balance board usage of Wii Fit and the fitness tracking that Wii Fit does with some original ideas of the gamepad that actually make it feel like something fresh that you couldn't have done before on Wii. And when you put that all together in a package, I think that's something that has a lot more market power. It's something that gets people's attention a lot more, and it feels like more of a complete package. Because the thing about Wii Sports Resort is it's all just kind of mini games, right? And there's not a whole lot of – it's very arcadey. It doesn't feel like there's a whole lot of end goal. It doesn't feel like there's a larger objective. And the thing about Wii Fit, it's all about the larger objective. It's get yourself in shape. But the things that you do to get yourself in shape are not all that much fun. They're very repetitive. They're very limited experiences. I think by combining these two together, you can sort of take the interest that people had in Wii Sports with the kind of more practical appeal of Wii Fit and combine those together into something that they might be able to recapture some of the lightning that they had last generation between those two.
I don't know, though, because Wii Fit is very much like a single-player game, and Wii Sports, the main appeal is for the multiplayer, and you can only connect one balance board to a Wii U, and you can only use one gamepad.
If you have a balance board and a gamepad and Wii remotes, you can create some multiplayer opportunities with those different kinds of controllers. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying I know how to do it, but I think there's a way to combine these things, and I think you could make it a lot more appealing if you did that. And it would be something that people would really get excited about. So, I don't know. That's my prediction. Who wants to go next?
Do you think we'll see anything on Smash Brothers?
Yeah. Oh, yes. I think they have to show
and
it. Even if it's just
how much? How much?
I think it's more than a tease, but ultimately, I don't know that it's playable. I think they have to show something that's more than the Solid Snake trailer. But it's got to be... Well, I don't know, because they're starting up their Japan Time website relatively soon. So, actually, that game may be farther along than we're giving it credit for. And for those of you who don't know what that reference is, I imagine everybody here does. In the lead-up to Brawl, every night at, I don't know, it was like midnight Eastern Time, that they would post something to the blog for Smash Brothers, like some new item or some new thing that was going to be in Brawl. Mostly it was just Sakurai trolling you for staying up late to see this thing.
Yeah, it went on for months.
It was like...
It was awesome.
It was like six months long. And I mean, sometimes it would be like a new character. You'd be like, holy shit. And then the next day it'd be like, bumpers. Bumpers suck. You get knocked around by them. And then it'd be like a picture of Star Fox getting knocked backwards with Sakurai having written the text. That looks painful. And it's like,
so you're saying they're getting ready to start that up in Japan for the new game?
That is my understanding, yes.
I have not heard that, but that's very exciting.
The term Japan time comes from the lead up to launching the website, where he actually wrote in there it was like 6 a.m. parentheses Japan time.
Yeah, so I think really it's probably not going to be playable, but I think we will get a pretty good Smash Brothers trailer with some character reveals and some new features shown. And, you know, this is the game. They're supposed to be developing it for 3DS and Wii U at the same time, and they're supposed to work together somehow. So I'd like for them to explain a little bit more about that, and mm-hmm. I'd love to see the 3DS version, because I'm actually really curious about how that's going to look and how that's going to work. I don't know that they're going to do that, but I'd love for them to at least talk about how the versions are going to work together or what the differences between them will be.
Yeah, I'd like to see, you know, one unlock something and the other. That'd be pretty cool.
Really? Connectivity?
Yeah. I mean, I think connectivity is overrated, but I would like to see some sort of interaction where you could maybe use the save file, sort of like Monster Hunter. You could, like, you know, use your save file, maybe swap it over, and maybe if you brought the one from Wii U over to 3DS, you would get some sort of extra characters, mm-hmm. something like that.
Yeah. Well, it'll be very... And yeah, I mean, that's the other thing. Like, are they going to have totally different sets of characters or totally different sets of levels? Or are they going to be basically the same game, except one's portable and one's on the big screen? You know? So it's a lot of interesting directions you can take with it that are... You know, I don't think it's very obvious how you do a fighting game across two very different platforms like that. So
it'll
be interesting to see if they talk about that or if they kind of show the Wii U version and then kind of pretend that the 3DS one was never announced. So we'll see about that. I've got a game prediction it's a prediction about the new 3D Mario that we know is going to be shown. And that's that I think... Maybe for only part of the game, maybe it's not the whole game, but I think they're going to revisit Subcon from Mario 2, from Doki Doki Panic. And I was just kind of thinking about, I mean, and, you know, a lot of times we talk about them going back to the Mushroom Kingdom, and I think the argument is that the Mushroom Kingdom is so iconic that it's difficult for them to set a large-scale game and have to build out that whole theme into a 3D world. That people know from their childhood. But Subcon, if you go back and play Mario 2, I just got it on Wii U Virtual Console a couple weeks ago, and I was playing a little bit of it. I was immediately struck by just how bizarre that game is. The world is just so strange that they throw you into. And it's so much more non-linear and confusing than the original Mario, which is just so literally straightforward. But I thought also Subcon has this kind of style to it. It has a certain sense of place that has not really been replicated in anything else except a couple of Smash Brothers levels, basically. And I feel like that's a place where they could have, it's not so cherished that they would have to feel iffy about expanding it and taking some creative license with it, but is a place that people would recognize. And it might give them some opportunities to kind of create some gameplay experiences that wouldn't be possible in a more traditional Mario kind of world. So, I don't know. You know, they could bring back some of the enemies that haven't been seen in a long time, like the Phantom Mask and Wart, the boss Wart. I just think it would be kind of a neat change of pace. So, I don't know. We'll see. Who wants to go next?
I got nothing.
It's really hard to make predictions this year. And I think the Nintendo Directs have deflated it. I think the fact Nintendo is being really upfront with what they're going to show. I mean, they've basically already told us what they're going to show. And I don't expect we're going to be too surprised beyond what that is. I mean...
Well, James, do you think the Xenoblade sequel is going to be playable? Do you think we're going to see a lot more of that?
I think it has to be. Like it to be. I think it might be. I think they'll probably press kit info on it. But my gut feeling, based on how they've characterized what they plan to do with E3 this year, is that their focus is on the American audience, and it is on stuff that you will be able to play during this year. And my guess is that the Xenoblade sequel does not meet that criterion.
Yeah, but you would think that the Xenoblade sequel, especially at this point, would be far enough along where it would be just an easy demo to set up and just have them run through like a boss battle.
Maybe, but I just don't know that they're going to want to devote the time or effort to it. I think they'll say, we have another E3 we can show this before this game comes out.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, I mean, in my opinion, if they have something like that, they shouldn't keep it in their pocket. They need to strike while the iron is hot and actually.
But the iron is very cold.
Get people. I'm just saying, get people talking about the Wii U. Like, that's the kind of game where the game press would look at it. You know, stuff like Mario. Okay, cool. It's a Mario game. It's really well done. It's well crafted. It's, you know, da 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 da.
But something
like
that. It's probably not surprising, right?
It's not surprising. But something like Project X.
But wait until you find out that it's entirely underwater levels.
Super Mario U, and the U stands for underwater.
I mean. Would I like them to show it? Do I think there is a logical argument to be made for showing it? Yes. Do I think if they show it, are they staying true to what they said is guiding their decision making parameters on this E3? Probably not. I don't think they. I don't think.
Okay.
Because I don't think there's very much chance. I don't think anybody here is going to disagree with me on this, that this game comes out in North America this year.
No,
I agree with you.
So,
What about Dragon Quest X? I mean, that's another big Japanese RPG that.
It's another big question mark, really.
Has been out since last year in Japan.
I think it's there. I think it goes. It goes back. I mean, did they show it at any E3 so far? I don't think they have.
Nintendo of America has never said the word Dragon Quest X.
I mean, we know it's coming to North America, right?
No, we don't.
It hasn't. I mean, it was. It was sort of confirmed there for a while.
Yeah, I think.
But they just stopped talking about it entirely.
I wouldn't be surprised to see it there. I mean, it makes a certain amount of internal sense. I don't think you're sure as hell not going to see the Wii version of it. But
right. It would be the Wii U version.
I'm kind of wondering. I mean, at this point, I'm wondering about that game being released in North America, to be honest with you.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it takes them a long time to figure out the business model for creating non-Japanese versions of that game.
I mean, it goes against. I mean, the audience in Japan is kind of primed for that kind of game. That's sort of like, you know, a subscription game kind of thing. Right. But I don't think Nintendo. I don't think they want to dip their toes in that pool in North America.
But here's the.
That's what
here's
concerns
the thing.
Me.
I just don't think they do.
But the Square Enix. I mean, they probably.
Square Enix has not given a shit about releasing Dragon Quest games in North America since 2000.
And the thing is, Square Enix has enough on its plate.
I know, I'm just saying, like, at this point, they have a done game that maybe they can monetize regularly to some extent, that maybe they feel like it's a revenue stream we need right now.
And they had, like, some sort of, like, I think they spoke to their shareholders recently, and their direction now is very much, like, tablets. They're trying to offer a console-like experience, or the same kind of experience that they used to provide on consoles, I think was their words, on tablets.
Every publisher who is beholden to their shareholders is going to say their business model is tablets. Whether or not it's true, they almost invariably have to say
it. Yeah, but if they had something else in the works, like if they think they would have said something. No,
well, they just released Final Fantasy
13-3.
I mean, they're still making console games. They showed a big expensive light and magic show at the PS4 reveal.
I mean, they're not abandoning console games at all.
No, I think if you want to be a CEO of a company that makes games and you don't want to have your shareholders kick you the fuck out, you have to say, oh, we're focusing on tablets, phones.
Well,
or you're going to get.
But how many of your resources are actually devoted to those games? That's a different question.
Well, and that's also driven by the fact that, you know, it's the return that you get for the investment you get in those game projects. I mean, you're not investing the amount of money that you did in Final Fantasy 14 on a tablet game, any tablet game. Any hundreds of tablet games, for that matter.
Before we move on to the next subject, I also just wanted to promise our listeners that I will be bugging everyone I see at Nintendo and Square Enix at E3 about Dragon Quest X, as well as Dragon Quest VII for 3DS. Because I care about those games. I know some people do. And no one is talking about them for North America. And damn it, I'm going to get some answers. I may not like the answers, but I'm going to get some answers about those games.
And well, for my part, I'm going to bug everyone at Nintendo for a new Kirby Tilt and Tumble. So watch out, Nintendo. On 3DS or Wii U, could work either way.
Yeah, it could go either way.
I'm on the case.
So, in terms of playable games, I'm assuming we'll see Monster Hunter 4.
No, not at E3.
You think it's too early,
Johnny?
That
game doesn't even have a release date in Japan yet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're going to have the Nintendo Direct about it. So I guess we'll see how far along it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, it's I don't want to diminish what goes into those games, but they are very iterative. So maybe that game is further along than we think.
Well, I mean, the thing is, though, this one, it's I think it's a brand new engine, is it not? I mean, they're pretty much
I mean, Monster Hunter 4 is probably coming out in late summer in Japan, but I don't expect to see it in North America this year at all. And I definitely don't expect to see it at E3 because nobody gives a shit at E3. I mean, I know the audience is growing little by little, and it's very passionate, the small audience for these games. But E3 is too big of a stage to show Monster Hunter in North America.
But see, the thing is, how big of a stage is Nintendo making it? I mean,
For 3DS games, there may be no stage for 3DS at E3.
Exactly. That's my point. Yeah. I mean, they may just jam a bunch of Wii U games in just to show they have biodiversity going on in their lineup.
Well, I've got one more prediction. I don't know about you guys if you have anything kind of miscellaneous, but my final prediction for E3 this year is that on the hardware front, although there won't be any new hardware revisions announced at E3, that's more something that would happen in Japan like in December. That's kind of traditionally when they announce stuff like that. And it's a possibility this year. I'm not predicting it. But for Wii U, I think at E3, Nintendo is going to announce that they are they're basically getting rid of the basic version. It's only going to be deluxe, and it will be $300. So effectively a price cut, but they probably won't call it a price cut. They'll probably say, now you basically, if you buy a basic, you get an upgrade to the deluxe version for free. That's probably how they'll phrase it. But it'll essentially be a $50 price cut on the deluxe version. So $300, and that'll be the only version going forward. It's just that. And of course, it won't have the digital deluxe thing. I think that probably was really a limited time program, although I think they should do it for everybody. But it'll still have Nintendo Land. It'll still have the increased storage space. It'll still be black. And, I think they will make that effective immediately because they can. And also because they really have to do something to juice Wii U sales over the summer, and not because in the long run, if they're gonna sell X number of units this year, it doesn't really matter that much if they sell them all at the end of the year versus evenly throughout. But for their software partners, you know, for their third parties, for the people who are trying to sell things on their platform, they need to increase Wii U sales ASAP. And they cannot afford to wait 6 months until the new Mario game comes out to do that. They've got to show some good faith with their partners.
Here's my counter there is that I don't know that they announced that at E3 because in terms of console hardware pricing news, they're going to be caught in the backwash.
No, their $300 announcement will be so great looking compared to the PS4 and Xbox price points. And Xbox and PS4 probably won't even get price announcements at E3. They'll probably wait till later in the year to do that anyway.
Yeah, that'll be August or September, I would think.
See, to me, they wait a few weeks after E3 before they do this announcement.
Yeah.
To give themselves a secondary bump.
Yeah, maybe. I'm with Johnny. I think they got to do it at E3.
It needs to happen soon.
The thing is, they honestly need more news coming out of E3 than just games, because that's what people expect out of them. Okay, they're going to announce a bunch of Wii U games. Great.
I think people expect a price cut out of them, to be honest.
That's the thing. People are expecting it, so I think they have to give it.
Well,
I don't know about that.
Well, the flip side of people expecting a price cut is that people are waiting for a price cut. And that's not good.
Yeah. I am. I'm waiting for a price. I'm waiting for something. Yeah. You know, because games aren't doing it, you know.
It'd be awesome if they would throw in a pro controller or something, just sweeten it up a little bit, but who knows? I don't know the details, but I think they need to simplify, because I think having two different versions of this console is doing them no favors right now. And we know for a fact that the deluxe version is the most popular version. Nobody really wants a basic. And they need to lower the price. So what they can save a lot of face by just kind of merging the two product lines and just making them all 300. Throw in some extra colors to kind of, you know, whatever.
See, to me, how that narrative plays out is they sort of silently stop replacing the basic at market. And then once they're not, they don't have to worry about, we're going to have.
James, maybe they already have.
No, because I still see a decent number of them out there.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean they're restocking them. Remember, the basic never sold all that well to begin with.
Maybe, but if they did, I almost feel like we would have started to hear about, hey, we're not getting basic shipments. I don't know.
I mean, most people probably haven't ordered a restocking of any Wii U's in so long because mm-hmm. they're not selling any of them.
Yeah.
That thing would be very hard to track, right? So they could have already kind of silently put an end to that version. And maybe you'll still be able to get a white version of it, but it'll still be essentially the deluxe version with the 32 gigs and the pack-in game. I just think E3 is a great time to announce that because they can't just make games fall from the sky. I mean, we've talked about this a lot. There's got to be something they can do immediately to make their sales not a complete joke, right? They've got to have some momentum going into the holiday season. I think this is a good way to do it.
Yep, I think it's something they can do right away, and it'll get people talking about the console again.
All right, so any final predictions, guys?
There's going to be some manufactured, awkward, meme-like thing in the Nintendo Direct that were shown before E3.
I don't know. I think they might lay off on that a little bit. I think what you'll probably get more likely is Iwata being Iwata, which means he'll do something goofy that he may or may not be aware is actually goofy.
Yeah.
Oh, he's aware. He's aware.
I mean,
they need to get down to business.
A lot of the stuff he's aware about, but there's stuff he does that, you know, I'm not talking about wearing the Google camera backpack. There's stuff he does where, like, he gesticulates and stuff where you think, that's really goofy. But I'm relatively confident he's unaware of it.
The thing is, I think Iwata's like your dad. He knows what he's doing is dumb and goofy, but he doesn't care. He just wants to embarrass you. I think that's the way he is. But he doesn't care. He'll do it at his own expense. He doesn't really give a crap.
He's definitely not what you expect from a Nintendo executive.
No.
And I'm fairly sure he's not my dad.
No. But I'm just saying, your dad in the general sense, Guillaume. whatever
actually,
that
Guillaume,
means.
We have some news for you. You might want to sit down.
All right, guys. Well, I think that's going to wrap up the episode for us. So sorry we didn't get to do any emails this week. It was just too packed with E3 stuff and games from the last couple weeks. But we do have a lot of shows coming up during E3. And if Guillaume and I are both going, so if we sit down the first day and there isn't too much news yet because we're waiting for the new thing, maybe we'll go through a few emails while we're out there in L.A.
You bastards. Those are our emails, too.
Hey, well, okay, James. Maybe you and John can do them from the home team while we're
it's the podcast,
while we're busy
people.
At E3.
There we go.
Yeah.
It's coming back, me and James.
Take your,
it's gonna
take
be a,
your choice of terrible hosts.
It's going to be a four-hour odyssey. Oh, it's going to be us, some emails, you know, maybe
I'm
get
sure
some
you
beer.
Can find some help if you need
some
it.
Kvassier.
some brandy for sure.
Yeah, we don't know exactly what we're doing, but you can expect multiple episodes during the week of E3, and so be sure to keep a very close eye on your iTunes feed, as well, of course, on NintendoWorldReport.com. We're going to have so much content, so many game impressions and news and interviews. We actually have some really cool interviews lined up. I probably shouldn't tell you about them yet, but some people I am very, very excited to talk to, including some old friends, and it's going to be just it's the biggest week of the year for us. It's gaming Christmas. So if you're not glued at NWR, then you're really missing out because we're going to be posting stuff so fast. It'll be hard to even keep up with it all. So that's what we're going to be doing. I hope you'll be listening and watching the site and participating in the forums, the chat room, everything else. We will see you there. Peace out, folks.
Later. Bye.
Later.